Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Josh Brown, I fought Mr. Freeze.
How did you find that, Scott Tilford?
Not as bad as I thought it was going to be, to be honest. Still one of the worst boss battles of the year, but it did. I did beat him second time. His giant life bar turns out you just can't use freeze weapons on him. And he goes down like a sack of potatoes.
I love you clarifying. One of the worst boss battles of the year, but not that bad. It was all right.
It's okay. Quite slim pickings for boss battles this year, I feel.
I suppose.
I should quickly say that this is The Wind-Up. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
Where we go through the latest video games, the latest talking points, news, things, and whatever else is going on in the industry. But we're going to do a bumper gameplay podcast this week because, oh my god, all the video games. I've managed to just throw money in all directions. I can't talk about God of War until Thursday. The embargo is now out and doing the rounds on Twitter, so check back on Thursday for full review thoughts on God of War Ragnarok. That game is in the bag, and what a lovely bag it is. Or is it?
Or is it?
I can't say. You have to find out on Thursday.
The bag is good. God of War, yet to be seen.
Exactly. Very, very lovely bag, very pre-order bag that you can get for that game. But yes, there's also Gotham Knights, there's Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, there's Bayonetta 3, there is Madison, there's also Signalis, and there's Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope, but we covered a little bit of that last week. I'm not going to go into Mario again, but we will try and get through the other five that we just said, opening on Gotham Knights, because what a weird game this is. What an absolute mixed bag. Speaking of bags, what a mixed bag this game is. But I just find myself saying I love it out loud to myself over and over again. And it's not that I'm discounting, because obviously they've patched the frame rate now. It's not 60, sadly. It's just a nice smooth 30, or a lot closer to 30 than it was consistently. So it's way more playable than it was before the patch, a very recent patch. But I just love the character writing. I just love being those four characters doing what they can to save Gotham. And I love the way that they write Red Hood, which is a sentence no one's ever said in the history of bat fiction. I hit a bit last night where I am swapping between all four characters. I'm not going to do spoilers or anything. But like I said, it's a nice character scene that I'm going to slightly describe. But at this stage, you're either in on the Gotham Knights train, and you've probably played enough as me and you have anyway.
Yeah.
Or you're just going, I'm staying the hell away from it. But in the way that they write the characters, I was talking to you about this this morning, the way they write Red Hood as this like big bruiser, literally listening to new metal, like Stranger of Paradise style in a scene, meathead, who underneath all that is just a guy who just wants to let people know that he's emotionally vulnerable. Maybe he wants to hug Alfred every now and then. Didn't see that coming.
I don't want to break your heart, Scott. Don't go breaking my heart. I couldn't if I tried, but I'm going to try my best right now. That the writing in the game can be quite good at times, but I just can't shake. No, it isn't. I just can't shake the fact that it feels like a CW show. It feels like
I wish CW shows were as good as this.
Batman show, or even a non-superhero show that they make. And I quite like some CW shows. I was a big fan of Supernatural back in the day.
Right.
CW-style writing, it's not that it's bad. I can just, like, see it. I can over this game.
There are parts of it where a character will say, I got this. You got this? We got this. Or, like, which I'm starting to despise that in everything now. I think now that I see it, I just can't. It's like noticing that I'm breathing or something. I'm so aware of every character says, I got this, over and over again. I do recognize that. And there is a bit near the beginning where Barbara says, like, that was awesome, in that stupid cadence that like every animated movie or anything aimed at a mass audience does. So I do see those bits. But for me, if it's pie charted, this is going to be on the bingo card, if it's pie charted, the majority of that game for me feels very fresh and very character focused. And I feel like all the four characters are very distinct and have their own motivations for why they care about doing right by Bruce Wayne's legacy. And I feel like they just fleshed them out nicely. It has like a soul. It feels like a team of people. Even though there are four writers on the game, it feels like a bunch of people sat down and wrote some characters. It doesn't feel like they're entirely amalgams of MCU light character writing, which we see in everything else.
Well, tell me, right, because I don't want to talk too much about Gotham Knights myself today, because the people listening to this have had enough. We did a full podcast on it last week. We did that follow-up news video. I've talked to death about this game, but I do want to know, you know, you like the character, right? You like, the story.
Four. I love all four.
That's getting you in.
Yep.
But from a core gameplay level, you were messaging me this morning, I think, or maybe yesterday, and you were talking about how, you know, you just kind of like zipped up to a gargoyle or whatever, jumped off, taken out some guys, performed some cool finishes, and were enjoying yourself.
It felt incredible.
On that level. Towards the end of the game, that stuff, that kind of repetition in the combat just turned me right off. But it seems like, you know, the combat and the gameplay itself is actually supplementing your love for the character writing.
The thing that's hilarious is that the combat model, it's quite slow and sluggish, and it would be, if I was being more favorable, it would be deliberate. Because like a lot of the animations do have good heft to them. If you hold the buttons down and do the heavy attacks, especially the heavy melee attacks, in Red Hood's case, I'm mentioning Red Hood a lot, but it's only because I was who I was playing as more recently, but his haymakers knock dudes the F out. They go flying across the street, and it feels great, but it is quite a slow set of animations that are playing out. And I remember I was recording something, so I was going to put it on Twitter and just be like, PSA, Gotham Knights combat can be brilliant. And then I watched the clip back and I was like, oh my God, this is so slow. But when I was in the moment, I was like, it's great. I'm like with Red Hood, I'm doing like twin pistol shots. I'm shooting two different targets with twin pistols. I'm doing a different grapple finisher. I'm starting a dude's face off a bootcase again. Like, it's great. And so that stuff can be very satisfying. However, I only really, I'm able to put up with the sheer amount of combat they throw at you because I rotate through all four characters. I think it massively falls down if you focus on one character. For as much as I've just mentioned Red Hood now, I do get to a point, maybe I'll do about 45 minutes to an hour as a character, do a couple of nights, because you do the game, the way that it rolls out is you do a night in Gotham and you bank everything that you find. There's only a set amount of premeditated crimes you can do before you need to go back to the Belfry, bank everything, do a story scene, and reset everything in the open world again, which I think is quite a nice little structure, because that's another thing that I really like, is that it scratches the itch of, I'm just going to play for 10 minutes, I'm just going to play for 20 minutes, or I can put an hour into it and do some story stuff. But in regards to the character stuff, I'm rotating through all four of them. I feel like I need to, because I am consciously getting bored of playing as one of them in that moment. And then I'll play as someone else, I'll unlock a bunch of extra points, and then when I switch back to them, I've got points to use to unlock more moves, but I've got those points from a different character. And I'm like, that's a great gameplay loop. And it's like, it's backed up by how snappy everything just feels, like, yes, in terms of how accessible the mission designs are. And that's the thing that you were saying. Like, I was driving across Gotham in the Bat Bike, which a lot of people hate the bike. I quite like it. I think I just like the Bat Bike in general. It carries me through. But you can hit the button on that and eject out of it. And I ejected, like, I hit the radar button as I was getting close to a bunch of goons. I ejected off and I saw where all the goons were up on this roof. And I ejected off the bike into a ledge grab, into a ledge hang. I shuffled along and I grabbed a guy off. It was all one beautiful flowing motion. And then I got up and did a few more stealth kills and went into a combat thing. Beautiful. Like, what? Beautiful.
My issue with that is I can't shake every time I do one of those kind of like sequences or I string together some really fluid animations. I can't help but shake how much more I enjoyed it 7 years ago in Arkham Knight and how much better it felt all that time ago. If that made sense. And it's fine here, but it feels like, to me, a watered down version of that combat model when it works. You know, we've talked before about like the direct mechanics that they bring over, especially in Batgirl's moveset. You know, you've got the glide from Arkham Knight and Arkham City. You've got the grapple where you can pull enemies to you from those games as well.
You can also dive and go straight again to get propellant.
100%. You've got like one-for-one recreations from those games, but it doesn't feel as good. And 7 years have passed, and I can't shake that.
I know what you mean. I feel like in that regard, only Barbara in the regards to, she glides around the city, whereas like Nightwing gets like a weird Fortnite glider thing. Yeah. But Red Hood, for as much as I laughed at this in the preview, he just kicks off stuff in midair. Like, he awakens this Lazarus Pit thing inside him, and he just like, it's like the Hulk in Ultimate Destruction. He's just kicking off stuff to get higher, and it's like, yeah, like that, like as goofy as that looked in the preview, tied in with what he's like exploring or whatever about himself. I quite like that. I was like, you're able to harness this energy rather than be scared of it, and then you can jump around the city and stuff, and it feels really overpowered, or it feels powerful to see. I don't know what Robin's traversal ability is.
He has the worst one. Would you like to know what it is, Scott Tilford? I loved playing as Robin. It's not. I wish it was a trapeze. I loved playing as Robin, but I didn't play with him as much because his traversal move sucked. Mm. What you do is you click the right trigger, and you go into this very slow kind of overhead view where you control a circle and you move it very slowly around the space. And when you let go, you can teleport to where the circle just was.
Okay.
And it's like the VR headset
movement.
Man.
You should love that.
Yeah, I should, but it's not in VR, so no, it sucks. It's the only game that makes teleportation boring. And I'm like, this could be so cool if you were Robin teleporting all over the gaff.
X-Men 3's tie-in game did teleporting better when you were Nightcrawler and you could just look at the silhouette of where you were going to go.
And that game was dreadful.
It was a bit. But
that mechanic, I agree, was really, really good. I'm going to ask you something right now that I might actually regret in 20 seconds' time. Gut feeling where you're at now. No, I can't ask you that until Thursday. I'm going to, though. That's the thing I can't wait to ask you.
I can't say.
Gut feeling right now. I think you're about 2/3 of the way through the game from what I've gathered from what you've talked about. Will this game crack your top 10 of the year? And if it does, are we still going to be friends afterwards?
I was going to say, if it does, you'll walk out this door, this room. I don't know, because I feel like this year has been absolutely stellar. Like, I feel like overall, the beginning of the year and where we are now is just so rammed with games. And I could give you a top 10 of the year based off everything we've already had. So I'm curious where the likes of this and God of War and Callisto Protocol and everything else that we're about to talk about. Bayonetta 3 is like knocking my block off in a nice way. I could give you a top 10 right now. So it's a hard top 10 to crack into. And also, we've talked loads about subjectivity, objectivity, review mindsets, etc. Gotham Knights is a nigh on impossible game to recommend because it is a game of like five different competing directions. I just find enough in it that I think there's enough of a soul, enough of a passionate force from the devs. They're like, we want to write this, do this story with these characters. They have these issues to them. And it's just interesting thematics. I love a post-Gotham a post-Batman Gotham.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just so rarely done and done well. And I love the feel of Gotham. It feels like it's alive. Like, there's people walking around and everything. They're putting their umbrellas up. And when it rains, they're responding to crimes in real time. Like, the first time that I did a little crime, I did a little crime. And then the police officer who I was saving was like, thanks very much, Red Hood or Nightwing, whatever. You best get out of here because my backup's on the way. And I was like, I'm just going to wait and see if they actually arrive. And they do. Like, ambulances arrive and they tend to people who are down. Police do follow-up reports. I had a whole thing where I accidentally came across a SWAT team in the middle of like a infiltration thing in like a parking lot, and I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Scott, I want to make an admission right now to you and everyone listening. At the weekend, I saw you retweet an opinion from someone who I can't remember the name of, sadly, but essentially it said kind of some of the things you mentioned there, especially about Gotham being alive.
Yes.
And it feeling lived in.
I knew when I said that I'd seen that somewhere too, but I do back that up, yes.
Yeah, not to say that you stole it. Obviously, you're echoing the sentiment. I just saw retweeted it, and this is how I know that you thought this beforehand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I saw that at the weekend. I saw you retweet that, and I turned to my girlfriend and said... He's mad. He's lost it, man. He's gone off the rails this weekend, he has. He's going to come in on Monday with some prime air golden takes, and I'm going to disagree with all of them because I agree with you on the character writing, and I love that you've managed to enjoy the combat because I also think the combat can be very good when it's firing on all cylinders. Mm. However, when you talk about Gotham being alive, I just don't see that at all, man. I was so disappointed with the sandbox in this game, and it looks cool from afar as a silhouette. It's striking up close and personal, man. I found it devoid of personality. I found it devoid of life. I didn't even see an NPC that I recognized, that I noticed for about 10 hours. I didn't even realize when we were doing our first review, this is an insider secret right now.
Yes.
I didn't want to comment on the NPCs because I genuinely couldn't remember if there were any in the game.
See, for me, every time you tap down on the D-pad to bring up the radar thing to show you where everything is all around you, like the vision mode thing, you see all of the NPCs in that. So for me, every time I see them, like when I'm walking through the city, when I'm responding to a crime or whatever it is, you can see them all. They've all got white outlines. So I'm just like, in amongst all them is the villains kind of thing.
I guess I just didn't. I mustn't have pressed that button much because I never got that.
Oh, okay. Because it's like, they have the whole down, like, and different, what Nightwing and Barbara have different moves they can do when they're in that scan mode. And you can like hack into stuff. Like, when I realized that Barbara has an unlockable drone she can just bust out,
yeah,
and it talks to you. Usually I hate that stuff. Like, post Star Wars, every little droid has a personality now, like, because it worked once with R2-D2. And so now, like, the drone in Gotham Knights, when it deactivates, it, like, disappears, and it says, like, back into the darkness. And I laughed, and I was like, oh, God, it's got me. I'm laughing at this as well. But yeah, I think there's enough in there. The thing is, you've told me that towards the back third, it completely falls apart, and the story is really not satisfying. And there's so much stuff being hung on that. And I'm a stickler for sticking the landing. Like, I think if something sets a load of stuff up and then falls the F apart, like, that final taste does, like, mean a lot. I think it's, you know, it depends how you framed your narrative.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff here is building to a specific thing, and I'm, what the hell is that going to be?
I think you might like it, because I will concede that I don't like what they do with the story, but I think the final cutscene that you get in the game is good and does support, again, without giving any spoilers, supports the themes and supports the character writing that you've been enjoying so far. So
that's,
I think,
cool.
That will end on a note where you think, that was messy, but at least they got the heart of it right.
The thing as well, to round out Gotham Knights stuff, because the whole game is, like I said, it's all about the characters and exploring the likes of the League of Shadows' influence on Gotham, what would they do if they didn't have Batman going up against them, what would the emergence of the Court of Owls, even though it's been underneath Gotham the whole time. The Court of Owls stuff, when it was written in the comics and everything, is one of my favorite arcs in Batman. Like, I absolutely love the way that it's revealed. I love Bruce being completely out of his depth in the comics, and I love just how much he has to try and fight what you'd later find out is called a Talon. It's like one of the premium assassins that the Court of Owls have, and they're like, they've studied everything Batman could possibly do. And I just love that scene where he first fights one and gets absolutely decimated. It's brilliant. You really feel just how much he has no idea how to contend with it. In this, they make the Talons. I mean, maybe there's a different version of it later, but I've fought two versions of the Talons so far. That one were just like feral zombies. All I had to do was hold Y to do a harder, or hold triangle if you're on PlayStation, to do a harder ranged attack to stun them, and then I could get a hold of them. That was nothing.
Yeah.
Nearly every enemy has that. It's like one thing you do to beat them. So there was like feral Talons or like feral zombies, and then there was like a bruiser Talon that had like a shield and a big mace or something. And I was like, this is nothing like, what? These aren't Talons. Like, what are you doing? Like, the idea of fighting a Talon when it was first, because there was a whole bunch of leaks and rumors over the years of what the next Batman game was going to be, and that they were going to do the Court of Owls, and that you would fight Talons in the open world, and there'd be massive, insane sub-bosses that you'd have to, like, really get the timing right to overcome one of them. And obviously, they ditched the timing combat and everything in this anyway, but the Talons that you get are terrible. And I love the look of the Talons, and I kind of can't believe that they've just made them, like, dumb bruisers, where all you do for the heavies is just do a heavy attack, and then grapple, and then do that over and over and over again, just spam them to death. And it's such a letdown in that regard. Like, I love the head of the court. The voice is great, but the rest of it, like, they don't feel like you're fighting Talons at all.
Is he, though? Is he not? Great? I don't know, man.
Why?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
He's got such a cool voice, and he's called The Voice.
He does have a cool... I'll give him that. You know what? Is
when he gets revealed, it's a bit like, oh, it's actually a voice modulator, and it's someone else entirely.
Yeah, okay. I thought that was a bit of a shame, but we're getting too far into spoiler territory right now. I will say that, you know, in terms of Gotham Knights, my favorite narrative of the year in games is you liking it. I've loved that turnaround because I didn't expect it at all, and I'm sure you didn't either.
No, not at all.
I genuinely have gotten a lot of joy out of you enjoying this game, because, like I said, just because I didn't enjoy something doesn't mean I want everyone else to not enjoy it. I hope people vibe with it. So to see you vibe with it over the weekend, despite some of the madness you might have been spouting right now, I've enjoyed it. I'm pleased it's resonating with some people. It hasn't been the write-off that I thought it was going
to
be.
I've got so many positive things to say about it. It's not that I'm not recognizing my own insanity. Like, I think the costumes in this are some of the most rewarding, best-looking drip I've ever seen.
I'd agree.
Every single thing you get in this looks incredible. And if you're going to do a loop-based game or a game where you're picking stuff up quite regularly or at a sort of regular clip or whatever, this has the most rewarding visual costumes than almost any loot game. Like, in terms of, like, everything you pick up, it's like, that looks incredible, that looks incredible. Like, they just nail it every time.
Every superhero game doing loot going forward needs to, be looking at this as the bar, because the Avengers model, not to just slag that game off 2 or 3 years after it already died, that was not the way, and this is the way. This is how you do rewarding customization.
And I love that, because I want to just say this before I forget this word, transmogrify. You can transmog everything that you have to make it look like any other costume, but I love that any costume you equip, the base one, if you haven't transmogged it to look like another one, any costume you have has like 4 sets of modifiers, so it's like 4 types of cowl, 4 types of armor. leg armor and chest stuff. And I'm like, that's even that everything you get, it's like that looks sick, but I can still go in and vary it a little bit. And I'm just like, they just again, they nail that side of it. I feel like I need to do to get the poison out of me, I need to do some sort of reasons it's almost a game of the year or you're some mad BS stuff. Just to get it out, because it's I've got endless positive stuff to say about it.
Exercise this demon, my friend. Who are you? Who am I talking to right
this
now?
This is Halloween right now, and I just feel like if my eyes glowed red, and I just like, this is me possessed by the spirit of wanting to love Gotham Knights. But yeah, let's transition into you, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, which we just filmed a news video on, because its launch weekend hasn't gone down very well. It's been quite rough, let's say, in regards to fans realizing how many features aren't in, various different decisions in regards to the maps, some stuff from the beta not carrying across, and the new loadout system, where you pick certain perks that you start with, but for the first time in, I think, first time in Call of Duty history, or first-person shooter ranked class history, you unlock perks as the match goes on,
yeah,
which a lot of people just hate the idea of. But yeah, overall, how have you found Modern Warfare 2, away from the... Well, just in general.
I've been enjoying it, man. Like, there's a lot of issues with it that we'll get into in that we already covered in,
go
in
check
the
news.
So check that out, please. But yeah, I am enjoying it at a base level. It's a kind of... It's a weird one, because I was looking forward to it so much. Modern Warfare 2019 is one of my favorite Call of Duties, as I know it is yours as well. And after a couple of CODs that I liked but didn't love, I was ready for Infinity Ward to come back with a robust kind of suite of multiplayer options, and they have done that, but it's hard to describe. It just kind of feels like there's a little bit of the soul missing this time around. COD 2019 felt like a confident step forward. We had the new engine. We had a return to an iconic franchise that didn't play it safe either. You know, like it remixed most of the story elements. It wasn't just kind of like treading on nostalgia entirely. It had new ideas. And this one is kind of a direct continuation of that game. And it almost feels like that game's kind of like expansion more than it does its own thing. And that's good because I loved 2019's game, but it just, there's something about it that's hard to pinpoint where I feel like the level design is great, the gunplay is great, it all feels good. It's just missing a bit of soul, and I don't know how to quite quantify that. But
I think
sometimes,
because we get it every year. Like, it's one of those things with an annual release, and I'm glad that they're taking a couple of years off. Like, just in general, I'm just glad of that. I want to see what they do after a couple of years. Like, that, those dev teams, it's like a cycle of, like, three or four main dev teams and a bunch of support teams to get that annual release cycle. That is, in itself, a production, like, miracle or whatever. The fact that it has been... so routine for so long, and that the bar is relatively high across the board. Like, there are CODs that people don't like, but overall I do want to commend the amount of people that bring this together every single year. But sometimes that factory-like approach is more evident than a new game or like a sequel or whatever it is, and this is just one of those years where, like, this was the going into this, it was the first time I felt like I don't need this since Modern Warfare 3. Which is a stupid sentence. I wasn't bothered about Modern Warfare 2 since the last time I wasn't bothered about Modern Warfare 3. But just the way that it's rolled out. And I've still never played Modern Warfare 3. And I wouldn't have got this. I said this about Gotham Knights, but I wouldn't have played this if they hadn't sent us a couple of codes. So obviously, massive thank you to Activision's PR for sending that stuff out. But at the same time, it's one of those games where I sort of like dove in. I do like to... the thing is, I was right on the fence on Friday because I was like, it's Call of Duty weekend. Oh my God, I can get some donuts and play Call of Duty. Like, I do this every year. And I want to do that. But at the same time, there was something about it in the run-up that just felt arbitrary. It just felt like, well, it's another year, it's another Call of Duty, and like, I guess we're doing another sequel. But at the same time, there's so much life in 2019's one, or it felt like there was. I know the seasons have started to wrap and everything, but like, that game is so fully formed that it was one of those ones where it was going up against, like, it didn't justify itself as a sequel. It was just, it's only justified on the factory spreadsheet. It's like, well, we need another one because it's another year and whatever. But I was perfectly happy with 2019's.
I think a lot of people were as well, and it's kind of... It's funny, man, because you criticize Call of Duty for changing too much and you criticize it for staying the same. It's almost like damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I had played a lot of 2019's game, you know, followed all of the seasons that they added afterwards. And I played a lot of Warzone as well, which obviously is a different kind of like style of Call of Duty game, but it used the foundation of Modern Warfare. It's the same gunplay. It was the same weapons for a lot of its lifespan. So it feels like I've lived with that experience in that game for longer than I usually would with a Call of Duty title. So going into this, those memories are already fresh. It doesn't feel like 3 years ago since we got that game. So going into this, I'm kind of more familiar with it. And I wonder if that's kind of making me... kind of criticize it more for being too familiar in terms of the actual gunplay and feel and look and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure. I don't want to be too negative, though, because I am really enjoying it, and I do think they have made a lot of improvements. I think the level design in the multiplayer maps is way better than it was in 2019. Like, I enjoyed some of the maps in that game, but I just think they've nailed the flow of the maps better this time around, and they work whether you're playing, you know, like Team Deathmatch, or whether you're playing a more objective-based mode like Headquarters. Mm-hmm. They feel better to play. They're a little bit more compact. You're not kind of wandering around wondering where the fight is. The spawns suck in them, which is a shame. So they haven't nailed that aspect. They haven't nailed that aspect, but in terms of pure design, I do think they're a cut above what we got 3 years ago.
It's like being served a specific meal once a year, and like you can reheat it over and over again. There's a little bit more, and how long can you drag it out? And then, but you'll get the fresh one once a year, and it's just, so I look forward to it. I love that meal; like, it's enjoyable enough. But at the same time, this was the one where the taste of the last one was still in my mouth. And as much as I played like Vanguard and Black Ops Cold War, which they were so forgettable, like both of them, as much as Vanguard's campaign had quite a lot of like resources put into it, I found the last two CODs to just be so forgettable and so in the shadow of 2019's Modern Warfare. That thing felt like that's what Call of Duty is. Like it's held up, like that's what you give to people to play and everything. And this one was just like, yep, there's the meal. If you want it, just go get it. Like, it's arbitrary. Like, sure. But it's a good meal. It feels good. Like, it feels great to play. But I feel like they've had to justify more, or they have to justify more, because they have multiple live service things all going on at once now. And it was like Modern Warfare, they really doubled down on that in 2019. And then it was like Black Ops Cold War had like multiple season stuff and a carry on of live action, live service elements.
Yeah.
And then Vanguard did. And it's just like, there's only so much of these things that you can overlap and expect people to either comprehend or care about, and it's just like, this is just like another wrinkle thrown in, and it's a big one, but it's just, it's hard to like make it stand out in that weird tapestry of COD.
I do get that, and I do have hope for it, though, because like you said, you know, they're taking a year off. This is going to be the only main Call of Duty experience for the next 2 years until we get whatever Treyarch is working on next, probably another Black Ops game. However, that hopefully means that we can indulge in the systems that are here and see them grow over the next 2 years, and I do think the foundation is strong enough to allow for that and to make for exciting updates to come. It's a game that I think will, you know, benefit from long-term additions. It's just a shame that the game at launch is missing some features that you would expect to see at launch, like a hardcore mode, like a stat screen that you can use to see your stats, like is standard in most Call of Duty games. You know, stuff like that, where you would expect, you would expect it to be maybe more fully formed than it is, but maybe that's by design, because it is supposed to be supported for 2 years, which is unprecedented in the Call of Duty world.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I'm curious what that 2 years feels like, because we already said in the video, in the news video, that they've sort of like, there was a map that was in the beta that wasn't in the, isn't in the finished game, which made me think that they're having to makeshift a season pass, and just because of how weird all the Activision, Blizzard, Microsoft stuff has gone down and whatever else, and trying to change sort of plans around that, or the potential of that, with the Activision acquisition hasn't actually gone through in full yet, and whether if they were in full control, if they would have another Call of Duty next year or whatever, there's all that stuff. And so, like, yeah, I feel like the rollout of it, it's good COD. Like, it's top COD. And I'm enjoying it, but I'm very much a casual Call of Duty fan, even though I do play them every year and I play like hundreds of hours of them. I'm nowhere near as into it as you are. I've joked to you about this before recording, and I think I mentioned it on the news video. I just want the M4 and I'm going to shoot dudes. I'm going to hold the left trigger and then the right trigger. I'm going to do a slide and then maybe I'll melee a guy. That's COD to me. It always has been.
I will say a final thing on the multiplayer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously when a new Call of Duty comes out, everyone looks back on the old Call of Duty with rose-tinted glasses and says, you know, well, that was amazing. We all had fun, didn't we? No, we didn't have fun at the time. Call of Duty 2019 in particular, that was like a trash fire at launch because it was so different and it was so unbalanced in a lot of places. Like, people just ran the M4 in that game for months because it was by far the best weapon and you didn't have to use anything else. Like I said, the maps were wildly inconsistent. You had some really good ones, and then you had some ones that were an absolute chore to play. So with that in mind, while that game, you know, had a strong foundation and got better, I do think Modern Warfare 2 is starting at a better point because, like I said, the maps across the board are better, and the weapon variety in particular is way more fun. Yes, you can just use the M4 that you start with and have fun.
I will.
But you are incentivized to use different guns, and those guns, most importantly, with the exception of the M16, are viable in their fun to use and unlock, and it doesn't feel like everyone's running the same build, which is appreciated. So they have learned some things, and it is in a better state at launch than 2019's was. Just hopefully, you would just think that with the lessons that were learned, you wouldn't have to be in this state of, well, it's good, but it could be better.
Yeah.
It should be better.
It's in an interesting state because, especially coming off the beta, like I mentioned, the map, but there was a lot of people who had a lot of feedback in regards to the loadout system or just various things. I remember the feedback when they put a post out saying, like, we hear all of you, we can't really implement any of this yet, but, like, cool, thanks. And it was just that whole thing of, like, well, why do we even call this a beta or whatever? And obviously, it's like a server test and everything. But yeah, the next 2 years do give them plenty time to address fan feedback and do various tweaks and everything else. So yeah, I'm curious. I like the idea of Call of Duty just relaxing a bit in terms of the annual cycle and letting the dev teams like step forward a bit more.
I agree as well. And again, I know I've said a final thing for like three points now, but this is the final thing. And
Return of the King.
It's a low bar to clear.
Yeah.
But considering how many other first-person shooter franchises, big first-person shooter franchises, have fallen on their face recently, Battlefield 2042, Halo Infinite, Overwatch 2, this has avoided that pitfall entirely, which is, you know, it sounds like something that we shouldn't be celebrating, but considering the trend that those other franchises were on and how easily Call of Duty could have followed suit, I think it is kind of impressive that it hasn't done that. But that means the bar is so low. The bar is in hell.
We need a soundbite just for, hey, a functioning video game. And it's just an echo and some little party poppers. And like, yeah, that's because that would get used like once a year.
Yes.
It's extremely rare. Let's pivot into something a little bit smaller. You've been playing Madison, which gave me, look at the visuals, give me PT vibes. You're very horrors man. Now, I saw your reaction on Twitter to a ghost that popped, or a zombie, whatever it was, apparition pointed right in front of you, and you screamed and the controller recorded it, which was brilliant.
Dude, man, there was so much of that. So much that I did not upload because it was too embarrassing. Madison is great. Madison is a game that I've been playing over the past week because it's obviously spooky season. Happy Halloween.
Spoops.
And like you said, it's very much PT inspired. You're playing from a first person perspective. You wake up in a house that is kind of surreal and a bit supernatural. You don't know what you're doing there, and you're walking around this haunted house, essentially trying to solve puzzles, trying to figure out the story. Mm-hmm. So it's very PT inspired, very Visage inspired.
Yes.
But it's just so scary and it's just so good. I know you had problems with Visage because it was a little bit rough.
Uh-huh.
This does feel more robust in terms of its feel, in terms of its puzzle design.
Yeah, I thought like Visage was one of those things where like visually.
Very good.
Very good. Horrible. Scary Halloween. It looked like it should be immediately my thing. And I liked a lot of just how kind of slow burn it was. But yeah, there was just something about the budget wasn't there for it. And it just felt a little bit too, like, I can see that character model. I can see that asset being used. I can see the strings. And it took me out of it. Does Madison have that? Madison feels a bit more fully formed in that regard.
A little bit. I prefer Visage, but I prefer what that's going for. This is still great though. I still think it's like a proper 9 out of 10 game.
Nice.
I love the puzzles and it was so scary. And what this does is actually take, not saying that it takes directly from Visage, but Visage had a section where you control a camera and you're walking around the dark with a camera and using the flash on it to illuminate where you need to go next. And all of the gameplay in Madison is based around this supernatural Polaroid camera that you pick up right at the very beginning. So you're using it in a lot of different ways. You're using it to, you know, take photographs of certain objects. And if you do, you might trigger something within the level. You might open a door. You might open a portal, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're also just using it on a base level to illuminate darkened corridors.
Honestly, I wish that was in more stuff. I feel like I saw that in the original Saw film. There's a bit when Lee Winnell's character is exploring the room. He's like in his own apartment, but he hears something thing in the pitch black, and you can only use the camera flash to see it. Great way of doing a slow reveal kind of thing. Because that was in the first Outlast, and then it's very rarely in enough games to do it well.
It's one of my favorite gimmicks, whether it's in games or in movies. But I think it works particularly well in horror games because you know, in so many first person horror games like this, you know, they kind of make you powerless, right? They don't give you a gun, you can't fight the apparitions, you got to run and hide. That is fun, but to me, it's not that active in terms of what you're doing. And I think the Polaroid camera actually strikes like a nice balance where you're given it, but you can't like kill things with it. But
not like Fatal Frame.
No, but you are an active participant in what, in the gameplay itself. You know, you're taking pictures of things directly. It's up to you to kind of press that button and illuminate the area. It's up to you to press that button and try taking a picture of an object that might transform or something like that.
Can you tell, game design wise, are you triggering the creatures or whatever with a flash? Are they there anywhere and you're revealing them? Or does it feel like when you hit the flash, something is right there in front of you? And you could have done that flash in 2 minutes time and it still would have been right in front of you?
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of both, I think. It hides the strings of that quite well.
That's good. That's cool.
Sometimes you kind of think, if I press the button right now, something will jump at me. But then there are other times where you're in a darkened hallway and then you might press the button and you might just catch like a flash of something that's off on the side, and it might be a ghost, but it might just be a fan. It might be something else. But I love that it makes you kind of like have to do it. It makes you press the button. It's not just, you're not just passive in it. And I like that it strikes the balance of giving you something to do in the gameplay that is active, but not just giving you a gun, not just giving you a machete to behead a ghost. And it's a really cool mechanic. The way that the puzzles are implemented with it are really exciting. And I just think that generally the plot, which I won't really spoil, but it's about this young lad who is investigating a dead serial killer called Madison Hale, who chopped up a bunch of victims and was allegedly like a witch. So you're investigating that and you kind of go from there. But it's really good, and it was so scary, like genuinely scary. Like, I couldn't play parts of it because I was that scared. I had to stop and just go away. It might not work for everyone, as we talked about in the horror podcast last week. But if you're easily scared by this stuff, I think it will terrify you in parts.
Do you think just to round this stuff up a little bit? Do you think that PT is almost its own genre at this point, where Kojima sort of showcased with PT a return to minimalist horror and location based horror and repeating the same location and making you scan for, like you said, in this one you're literally taking photos of different things and triggering stuff in the environment or whatever. Does this feel PT inspired, or does it feel like it's definitely its own thing, but does the PT-ness, is that in there?
Very much the PT-ness is all over it, in
that's
a good
the
way
tea,
though
you might
because
say.
Yeah, that is the tea. Because we didn't get PT, so no. We had an idea of what that game might have looked like. We had a couple of puzzles, but we didn't get it fully fleshed out. It's almost like these games are taking that idea and then fleshing it out. So you get puzzles that might evoke the puzzles from PT, where you're looking for specific things in the environment, looking at a specific picture, but it's just kind of the full realization of that, which I really love. Between this and Visage, I almost don't lament the loss of Silent Hills anymore, because it's kind of I've got them. I've got a scary experience in that vein, and both experiences are really good. Both experiences, while borrowing elements from that playable teaser, are still novel, are still presenting an original story that is worthwhile. And so I've kind of made peace with PT's cancellation because of that, because in a way, I've experienced it, man. I've played Silent Hills. I've played PT now.
It's true. I can't not address a potential pun. Is PT just peace time now?
Is that
what it has to be at this stage? Maybe the amount of Silent Hill projects that are now in the works maybe will eventually lead to something first person Silent Hilly being done, but I guess we'll see. Next thing down is Bayonetta 3. I've only put about an hour into Bayonetta 3, but oh my God, do they know exactly what they're doing in Bayonetta 3, to the point where I feel like Platinum, obviously there was the whole sort of debacle with Helena Taylor over how much she was being offered to be to reprise the role of Bayonetta, and it went to Jennifer Hale, and there was all this general stuff around Platinum as a dev, because Babylon's Fall, one of the absolute worst things that released in the last year, and it's going to be shut down I think it's February next year, because it just had no players whatsoever, and it was like, oh my God, have Platinum lost it? Their new CEO, or one of their CEOs, was talking about embracing NFTs and embracing all this horrible stuff that no one wants from them whatsoever, because they do action so well and so signature stuff style, where a good Platinum game is unlike anything else. Hideo Hideki Kamiya, obviously dude has so many roots across Capcom and various other franchises and everything else. And Bayonetta 3 was just needed to be a return to what they do better than anyone else. And Bayonetta 2 was 2014 or something.
Wow.
Which is a long time. Two words, kaiju button.
Wow.
Just literally, I read this thing that Bayonetta 3 changes the combat quite a lot. And I was so curious what that was going to be. And it's literally just that when you hold the left trigger now, I forget what left trigger used to do in Bayonetta 2, but in this one, you just hold the left trigger to just summon a giant kaiju. And they give you various different creatures that you can summon, which kind of work a bit like V's summon in DMC5, where you would sort of summon something and then you'd be able to directly control it or whatever whilst your character stays in the foreground. So in Bayonetta's case, they sort of do a risk reward thing where you summon something by holding the left trigger. It'll stay summoned as long as you hold the left trigger, and you can push the right trigger to immediately bring it back, because they do have a control meter. So you're summoning these demons from the void, and one of them's a giant T-Rex, I think it's called Gamora or something, and you can summon a giant sexy witch that just looks like a giant version of her. They're the two that I've got so far, but the more you leave them out, the more they want to break free, so you can use their overpowered abilities, but they might just turn and eat you. So it's you need to get that right, and you need to be despawning them as much as possible. Also, you can't control Bayonetta when you're summoning them. She just does a really cool dance whilst your analog stick now controls the creature, and all your, it's just like watching a Godzilla King Kong fight in the near distance while you're in the foreground doing your summoning dance or whatever. And also if Bayonetta gets hit, they'll despawn, so it's you need to make sure when you're deploying kaijus. But it means that you're factoring kaijus into combos the same way that you would do a Platinum style DM Devil May Cry style combat combo, and it's just unbelievably satisfying. And I just feel like on Switch it shouldn't run as well as it does,
right?
I think they've had to sacrifice quite a bit of draw distance, quite a bit of overall detail, and some of the environments, but it works and it looks gorgeous, and it plays gorgeously. A lot of the more spectral realm stuff looks a lot better than the open world parts, which I will throw in.
Open world parts,
they do a whole wide linear thing. I feel like that's the new in term now. I feel like we've had the open world boom across the 2010s, and wide linear is the way forward, kind of like how Uncharted does it, or how God of War 2018 does it as well, where you just have wide linear segments where you can take a minute and explore a little bit and get a bit of lore or find some collectibles or whatever it is, and go from there. what's what Sonic Frontiers is going to do. and that's kind of what Bayonetta is doing. And those parts of those levels, and where you go into, I think it's like the third area you go into, is like this really big open plains kind of place. Just looks like Scalebound. I was like, this gave me Scalebound vibes. There's like waterfalls and rocks and whatever. And I was like, this reminds me of Scalebound. And that was Platinum's canceled thing.
Yes.
So why not put those levels in here?
Ooh.
But yeah, the things that they're doing, and I haven't even got to the other playable character yet. There's another playable character called Viola, who's a new character, because it's all about the multiverse, and she's coming from a different universe, and her Bayonetta, something happened with her, so she's coming across to see your Bayonetta and whatever. Viola seems immediately super charming and just super, like, energetic and wants to help and a bit of a badass, kind of like a punk and whatever. I've only seen, like, a couple of cutscenes with her in. But, yeah, I feel like I've just talked about 8 minutes straight, but I've loved the first hour of this so much. It's so dumb and over the top and ridiculous and couture and fancy and fashionable and everything else. Everything Bayonetta is, that it's just beautiful.
You have convinced me to get this as my Nintendo Switch Christmas game, because I'm so pleased about this as well, because on Friday I know you were wondering whether to buy it. There's so many games already that you had to play. Should I get Bayonetta 3? And the fact that you did, and the fact that it was this good and has energized you this much, has made me want to play it, Scott, because I'm not familiar with the other Bayonetta games. I didn't play them myself.
Right.
But this one, like, looks good, and it's gotten good reviews, and the idea of a kaiju button mid-combo is...
It's wow. Pretty great. The thing is, I've played all the Bayonettas, and I got the furthest through Bayonetta 2, but I got sick of the, like, how, because you have Witch Time or Umbra Time or whatever it's called, but you press the left trigger, and it's the right trigger now. When you dodge at the right time, you get a little window of slow motion, and that's kind of part of your combo. That's kind of part of your overall way that you deal with enemies. And I got a bit sick in Bayonetta 2 of how much, you know, you were just doing that. It was like, wait for your time to parry or evade, do that, do damage while you're in slow motion, keep going. And it felt like you were getting knocked out of combos because you were just waiting to go back into the slow motion stuff. And I feel like they've tweaked that a lot better here, because I never finished Bayo 2, and it was because of that, because I got sick of just dodge window the game. Whereas that's still in here, and it feels like a nice reward for getting your timing right. But you have all these big, way more over the top offensive moves where you can just be like, you know, there's one dude left in the arena, I'm just going to summon my giant T-Rex to eat him, or do like a body slam, because it'll just grab him and slam him off the ground over and over again, whilst Bayonetta's just doing like a half naked dance in the foreground. And I'm just like, yeah, this is absolutely what Bayonetta brings to the table, and it's just so spot on.
That's video games.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, it's just so much where you're just like, that's video games. but in that really signature Hideki Kamiya / Platinum way,
yeah,
that no one else goes anywhere near. It's, yeah.
It sounds like a big, ambitious game from what you've mentioned there, in terms of, you know, like those wide linear levels, in terms of the multiple playable characters. Mm. It sounds way more, and this is no slight on what I presume Bayonetta to be, but it sounds just kind of like way bigger than what I thought of Bayonetta 3 would look like.
Yeah, well, I think they've got a mix of the levels. Like I said, I'm only about an hour in. There's quite a lot of cutscene, like, especially at the beginning. There's a lot of cutscene with a lot of choreography and a lot of over-the-top stuff happening, and then they threw you into fights in the middle of it. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting the open-world stuff. Maybe that was mentioned in a lot of the previews, but I didn't know that was coming. And just to sort of have an open-world sensibility, have bits where you can sort of go to the sides of levels and do a separate arena encounter, or go find some collectibles or whatever it is. You've still got, like, levels overall. It's just that they don't feel as corridored as the older ones.
Yeah.
But it feels, like you said, it feels a bit more ambitious. But yeah, it's one of those games, and I love when this happens, where you play something and you're just thinking about it all the time. You can't wait to get back into it again. And after we do this podcast, I'm going to spend my lunch break playing Bayonetta 3.
Nice.
And I can't wait to dive back into it. So yeah, I'll keep up with Bayonetta 3 going forward, although Sonic arrives in a week.
It's certainly
what am I supposed to do about that?
I don't know this for sure, but I'm imagining you all day, every day, refreshing your inbox, hoping that the code gods send Sonic Mr. Frontiers Sega. Yours way. Mr. Sega himself rocks up in his blue Sonic hat, and he gives you the copy of Sonic Frontiers.
I don't think I can set up a custom email notification to go, Sega, when it arrives in the inbox. But maybe. Final game, though, that's worth talking about is Signalis, something that Signalis, I didn't even know was out. It's like this throwback PS1, sick art direction-wise horror game that's on Game Pass at the minute.
Dude, twice this year, I have been scrolling Game Pass and seen something that is so up my street, I've needed to drop everything else I was doing to play it. The first was Immortality.
Yes.
That is not how you pronounce that game. Immortality.
Immortality.
The second is Signalis, because I saw the idea of this old school retro PS1 survival horror game inspired by Resident Evil, inspired by Metal Gear Solid, and I knew I needed to play it right then and there, and it did not disappoint. I played almost all of it in one sitting, and it's quite a big game.
I think you messaged me like, I just done 9 hours of Signalis or something. It's like, did you have God of War saved or something?
It took me 9 hours to finish. I played 2 hours on the Friday night in between Call of Duty, and then I played 7 straight hours of it on the Saturday because I couldn't get enough of it. There's something about this game that just speaks to me. The presentation is so impressive, considering it was made by 2 people, essentially. Right. You would never be able to tell. It's so confident in its presentation. It's so confident in its gameplay. Mm. And if you like cyberpunk horror, which I think you do...
The terms you were reeling off before about like PS1 survival horror, like as three... terms together,
yeah.
A few things connote better memories.
Well, it was so hilarious that we did the horror podcast last week where we were talking about Resident Evil 1 on the PS1, and we were talking about tank controls, we were talking about fixed camera angles, we were talking about inventory management, and then 2 days later, I find this game has just released that ticks all of those boxes and does it very well. So yeah, if you ever played an old school Resident Evil, you'll kind of know what you're in for here. You're just going through these levels, you're trying to figure out the puzzles, you'll need, you know, specific keys to get in specific doors, you'll need to bypass enemies, you'll need to conserve ammo, all of that good stuff presented in this dystopian, futuristic environment that has its own mythology and lore that's really fascinating to dig into. The plot itself is really surreal and kind of abstract in a lot of ways, but it comes together so well towards the end that I was at the cinema on Saturday night watching some of my favorite movies ever. I was watching The Shining. I was watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the first time on the big screen. And in the back of my head, I was thinking about Signalis' story because I couldn't get it out of my brain and certain images that were in the game.
That's cool.
Because it kind of has this hybrid style. The gameplay itself, like I said, is that kind of isometric, almost more MGS1 camera than Resident Evil 1 camera. It's kind of like top down, but the cutscenes are this sort of 2D animation. It's like 2D animation, very colorful, very anime, very kind of like visual novel in a way.
It's a little bit like Hyper Light Drifter.
Very much like that. Yeah. Or what was that Velocity 2X game?
Y'all got all the fucking.
Yeah, yeah, like the sort of visual of it, it evokes that. And those cutscenes are so striking and well put together and beautiful and colorful and haunting and gory and all of those other adjectives that it just... Man, it was one of those games that worked for me top to bottom, and it's going to be in the top 10, and it was...
It's your Gotham Knights. It's all that implies it's worse. So no, it's good.
It's just Game Pass is, here's another bingo card, the best value in gaming right now.
And it just literally is, though.
It constantly throws stuff up for me like this, and I appreciate it, but it almost makes me wonder, what stuff... tailor-made for me that might have released over the past few years that I've not got to because I've not been scrolling the dashboard and just looking for stuff that appeals, because twice this year I found 2 of my favorite games of the year just by looking at what's out this week, and I've never really thought to do that before because we do so many podcasts, we do so many lists, and we all almost have a roadmap of what we want to play in our brains that I don't kind of just jump into the recently added to the store list, but I might do that more because, man, Signalis was what a find that was.
Well, that was always going to be one of the interesting things of like, how do we adapt to covering Game Pass? It's like there's like 8 or 10 games or whatever every month. And I was like, well, neither of us are going to be able to get through all of them because there are the bigger titles, quote unquote, that a lot more people are going to be searching for. But then, like, something like a recommend, like a podcast conversation is somewhere where you can drop those things in. And they're like, yeah, I mean, your picks have been stellar like this year. Like, Immortality is so unique. And then Signalis is like I said, when you were reeling that off, my brain went to so many like nostalgic, oh my God, like Resident Evil, Metal Gear Solid, like PS1 survival horror, all these different things, Parasite Eve, whatever. Just like you said, it's like it's almost like they've curated it.
Yeah.
The curation that is going into Game Pass is they're nailing it. Like as much as they're not doing per person recommendations for Game Pass, maybe that'll be something they do in the future or whatever. They are still providing these like there's such a range of titles. I think Persona 5 Royal is also on there.
Yes.
Which got a lot of the headlines, but then it's like alongside that you get people who might just check out Signalis or whatever.
I will say as well, while it is on Game Pass, it's available for PlayStation, it's available for Switch.
Right.
It sounds like we're sponsored, we're absolutely not.
Switch game.
It would work on Switch as well because of the way the levels are designed, the way the mechanics work, it would work on, it would work handheld really well.
Oh, it's
I almost
tasty, that.
Wish I played it handheld because it would be kind of spooky in the dark.
Kind of like the horror levels of Metro Dread, like just sort of nice and dark and
Very much. Oh. So I just kind of want to throw that out there because I would definitely recommend it if you're wanting something spooky to play tonight. And if you're a fan of old school survival horror, if you're a fan of cyberpunk horror, if you're a fan of really cool visuals, it sounds like I'm sponsored, but I'm definitely not.
We're definitely not.
The game, because I want to talk to everyone about this game, because it rocks.
I have the game downloaded. If I ever get through Gotham Knights Modern Warfare 2 and Bayonetta 3, Mario and Rabbids, and God, the rest of God of War.
And Scorn.
And Scorn, for the love of Lord. We'll see. But video games are back. We've waited quite a while. There's so many right now.
I'm drowning in video games right now. It's almost overwhelming. We talked about this 0.1% problem the other day, but there's too much content right now.
I'm loving the content, but it's only because there's been nothing for the last like 7 months. But yeah, we'll continue to get into all these video games and whatever else crops up in terms of news and games, etc. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.